Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, welcome to Friends with Friends, another episode. My name is Pete Allison and this is Dave Cribb.
Ahoy hoy, good morning, afternoon, evening, good night, depending on when you are listening to this podcast. Are you back to your regulation opening now, Pete? Is that
I just realised that, yeah. I haven't done it for a couple of weeks, so it's fine.
It was nice to mix it up for a bit, like the sort of experimental middle albums, and then you're just back to the old classics.
Yeah, people don't like change.
Yeah, exactly. People really don't. Should we meet today's friend?
Yes, very good idea.
Today's friend is the wonderful author and broadcaster. It's Chris Smith.
Hello.
Hello, Chris Smith.
Hi. This is very exciting.
Is it?
Yes.
There's a sense of trepidation when people say it's very exciting.
No, it's genuinely very exciting because as you and I discovered when we had a few drinks together last weekend, we love chatting about Friends. Mm. So it's nice to just formalise that process and do it with microphones.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically the whole concept behind this podcast.
That's all it is, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it.
Like our nonsense has a sense of purpose now.
It's good to know. that will literally be the title of your autobiography. My nonsense has a sense of purpose. The Dave Cribb story.
I'm thrilled with that. Yeah. I'm writing that down immediately. This is why you're an author. Mm. But you're a big Friends fan, right?
And I love Friends. Well, unlike you millennials, you know, I was there in the trenches, man. I watched the first few series when I used to do night shifts, caught up with them again on VHS box sets. But then, you know, I was there when when Rachel got off the plane.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching it not on catch up. It wasn't even a thing.
No.
I didn't stream it. I had to be there and enjoy it along with the rest of the world as it happened.
So I watched Rachel get off the plane live.
But you were probably about four.
No. That was 2004. I was 16.
Oh, okay.
No,
right.
18, maybe.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
I'm not good at maths, it turns out. but were you there? Did you watch the first? Did you watch the pilot when it went out? Were you there from the start?
No, I don't think I watched the pilot. I think I remember getting into it during the first season, though. And then going back to the beginning. And it's only then... And it's only when you sort of see Friends with an overview that you realise that Rachel running in with her wedding dress in the first episode, there is kind of an overarching plot to the whole thing.
Yes.
It was cleverer than we realised at the time.
It's nice, Chris, and you sort of brought this up, because Pete's a few years younger than me.
Right.
And a number of our guests have so far been nearer to Pete's age than to my age. And so none of them tend to remember watching it at all on not at all on Channel 4,
I feel like a grizzled Vietnam veteran.
No,
you don't understand, Pete. You were there.
I'm the E4 generation. The E4 generation of two episodes at 5 o'clock, that's me.
But I mean, Friends Fever was genuinely a thing. I mean, I literally do remember people having the Rachel, having that haircut and wanting to dress like them. Apart from Chandler, who has terrible dress sense and wears like too many sweater vests. Yeah.
Watching it back, the fashion choices are
so bad.
Something.
I mean, he wears a tie in the episode we're going to discuss today, which is one of the least attractive things I've ever seen.
It's one of the first things I wrote down. I'm just astonished that anyone ever designed it.
It's got a strange sort of multicolored pattern on it, hasn't it? It's like
it's like two-tone. It's really bright yellow and bright blue. It's kind of like an unclothed female figure. But I mean, surely not even Friends with it. I don't know what's going on with it. It's horrific. I just only hope he was paid a great deal of money to wear it on the show.
Do you think they had the
Thai product placement.
Yeah, Thai product placement.
I really hope so.
There is a lot of very obvious product placement in Friends, but I've never really, apart from the obvious Ralph Lauren, Bloomingdale's.
There's a lot of that going on. Yeah. There's a great deal
but
of that
the
going
guys,
on.
There's not too much, is there?
No, but I mean, maybe it would enable us to forgive quite a lot if it actually came out now. Matthew Perry came out and said, yeah, I was paid to wear that stuff.
$10 million I got from sweatervesta.com.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So how did you go about choosing your episode?
Well, I'm actually rewatching Friends at the moment with my 12-year-old son.
Oh, that's nice.
And we've taken him... Yeah, so thanks to the wonders of Netflix. So we're actually going all the way through from season one. And the episode I've chosen is where we've literally got up to. We're kind of mid-season five at the moment.
Oh, great.
And we just watched it the other day. And a couple of things have struck me about Friends, sort of re-watching it with my son. Firstly, they talk about sex a lot.
Yeah. Like, more than you remember.
More than you remember, because you remember it being very, in a way, a bit middle class and a bit innocent, don't you? And think, oh, it's Friends. It's very, very inoffensive. And it is very inoffensive, but they talk about shagging, like, all the time, and quite openly.
They talk about porn quite a lot.
Yeah, and I know, pick me up some porn. Yeah. Like, what? Excuse me? Sorry.
It's a real insight, though, into life before the internet.
Yes. You couldn't make it these days. I mean, if Chandler these days went, pick me up some porn, Joey would just be like, well, if you've got a phone, haven't you? Yeah. Like, yes. Could I be any more looking at porn on my phone? wouldn't be quite as funny.
No. And, you know, they've played with what they had at the time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, they just have to look in lay-bys like we had to in the 70s.
I'm not accusing you of being lazy, Chris, but your choice of your episode was...
In a passive-aggressive way, Dave, you kind of are.
You pressed play on Netflix first one that came on.
I think this is genuinely a classic episode. It's a really good one, and it's a classic Friends episode because it's got the real classic Friends format. It's got the three plots. You've got your continuing plot, you've got your main sort of episode plot, which gives it its title, and then you've got the funny kooky plot going on underneath the surface. And the six friends split into three groups of two. It's exactly as the really great Friends episodes work so well.
It is, and it's actually the first thing I noticed was, because we've obviously overanalyzed a lot of Friends episodes
Absolutely.
Now. And the hit rate of each of those three plots actually being really strong.
It's not bad, is it?
In their own right.
It's not, you know, they're not long episodes either. And the little scenes they have to build, and the three plots are just all really well done and are all funny in their own way. Yeah. And there's some great acting as well. It's a great episode.
We've also kind of referred to in other episodes as well, how there's sort of two eras of Ross. There's failed romantic Ross, and then there's when he becomes completely unhinged. And this is the episode you picked is kind of the one where that change in Ross happens.
This is where the seesaw of Ross's mental health tips.
The pivot, if you will.
Yeah. Oh, very good.
Of Ross's mental
health.
It
is indeed the pivot. But it's also, it's a long process, but I mean, I think all wise people agree Ross is the best character in Friends.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Ross is a fantastically acted. And we'll talk about his acting in this episode later on. But this is the point when you really realise he's starting to steal it. He is really starting to steal it at this stage.
And it careers through to the last...
Yeah.
Well, there's five more series after this, isn't
Absolutely.
There?
Absolutely.
It's the David Schwimmer show then,
crucially
isn't it?
got rid of Emily as well, the worst character ever in Friends. But I can't really discuss her because she's not in this episode.
No. Well, the aftermath of Emily is in this episode, so...
The aftermath's good.
We're
because
midway through season five, and this is what's prompting Ross's... Nadir, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we find him at his lowest point. So tell us what the episode is, Chris.
Well, I can explain the episode, Dave, by opening my cool bag that I brought with you. And so
Chris entered the studio and said, I've brought props.
Dave, would you just like to talk us through what I'm handing to you there?
He's handing me... Oh, my, this is a... Pete, I'm so sorry. And if you haven't listened to this podcast regularly, Pete and I do it in different cities.
Yeah, I'm
so
not Pete in the same room.
I'm in London.
Yeah.
And quite often the guest is here with me, and I'd say 95% of the time you don't miss anything.
See, judging by your reaction and judging by the fact that Chris just tied it into the episode, have you just been presented with a sandwich?
I've been presented not only with a sandwich wrapped in tin foil, but with a note on the top that says, knock knock, who's there? Ross Geller's lunch. Ross Geller's lunch who? Ross Geller's lunch, please don't take me, okay?
That is amazing.
And that is attention to detail.
That is attention to detail.
No guest has ever brought presents before.
Well, there you go. There's one here for you, Pete. I mean, I'll keep it in the cool bag. I don't think it's going to survive the postal service, to be honest. But yeah, so the episode we're talking about is the one with Ross's sandwich.
The one with Ross's sandwich.
And hopefully, I mean, you remember this episode, don't you, I think? If you've watched and loved Friends,
yeah,
you remember it from that one line. Yeah. But actually, going back and watching again, it is a great episode. Yeah. All three plots are really strong.
It's really strong. Right, the one with Ross's sandwich, season 5, episode 9. Here's your synopsis if you haven't watched it recently. Phoebe takes a literature class and regrets bringing Rachel along, so has a little fun of her own. Sometimes these plots don't really give anything away. Joey, meanwhile, becomes tired of covering up Monica and Chandler's secret relationship, while Ross is advised to take time off work after losing his temper when a colleague eats his Thanksgiving leftover sandwich.
That's right. So it's leading up to the Christmas episode for that season. So you've just had Thanksgiving going on. But yeah, it is a great episode because the Monica Chandler plot is bubbling along just at the point where it was funny. Mm. Before it all got kind of, you know, very serious, and Chandler did that awful thing where he tries to be sincere.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah. I love you. I love you, Monica. Which just makes you makes your anal sphincter want to crawl up into your body and strangle your own heart. It's so embarrassing when he tries to be sincere. Sincere Chandler is the worst, clenchingly awful thing that's ever happened in Friends. So this is the bit where it's funny. So Monica and Chandler are shagging. No one knows about it except Joey. And Joey is having to cover up for them. So three times in this episode, things happen that Joey then has to cover up for. The first of which is like right at the beginning, this incredible like Princess and the Pea moment from Phoebe, yeah, where she's sitting on the sofa in Monica's apartment, and he goes, what am I sitting on? I mean, how you would know there's a pair of Y fronts like down the side of the sofa cushion? That's the most incredibly sensitive posterior Phoebe must have.
Yeah.
And then pulls out this the most 1990s pair of pants you've ever seen in your life.
But did Pete, I mean, Joey makes reference to it, doesn't he?
He does. Tighty-whities.
Tighty-whities, what are you, eight? Yeah, but yeah, even in the 90s, I just refuse to believe anybody wore them.
They're like granddad pants from the 90s. They're not just sort of dated looking at them now.
It's kind of what I imagine people wore during the war.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like when the air raid sirens came on.
And then bored the younger generation by going like, well, you know, back in the day,
yeah,
we didn't have boxer shorts. We had to wear these. But I suppose, you know, they are the pants of a man that wears a tank top, aren't they, really? With a shirt underneath it. So
very in keeping with Chandler's personality. Very,
and somebody, there must have been a production meeting when they went like, okay, well, we need to buy some props. What kind of pants does Chandler wear? And they're like, yep, those will probably do.
Yeah.
That probably does it.
Are excellent, aren't they?
And Joey just has this brilliant repeating line that you know, comes back so well at the end of the episode, where he just has to keep going, I'm Joey, I'm disgusting. Mm. I hide my underpants in people's houses. It's just such a nice way, because sometimes the continuing plot in Friends, the one that's sort of, you know, keeping the continuity of the series going,
yeah,
it can be a bit of a boring bit of the episode.
Right.
And it just feels a little bit shoehorned in.
Yeah.
This is an example of being genuinely as funny as the other two bits of the episode. So yeah, it works really well.
And those are this episode has two very memorable takeaway catchphrase lines, doesn't it? That I'm Joey, I'm disgusting is,
yeah,
a line you remember and
absolutely,
you quote,
yeah,
as is the My Sandwich, which we'll come on to a little bit later on.
We certainly will.
Talking of which, I'm just opening my sandwich.
Okay, so let's talk about the sandwich then.
Sorry, Pete.
Before it goes too warm. So the one thing that struck me about the one with Ross's sandwich, and hopefully this has struck other people as well, is does it really make a sandwich nice to have a slice of gravy-soaked bread?
It sounds
in
very wet, doesn't it? Yeah.
Do you think it sounds revolting?
Yeah.
It sounds a bit revolting. So shall I tell you what I did this morning, Pete?
Go ahead.
I got up this morning. I made a saucepan of gravy.
No, you didn't. Did you actually?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And what I've done is brought in a sandwich for you and Dave, although you're in Leeds. It's turkey, stuffing,
oh my Dave,
Swiss cheese,
amazing,
and in the middle, a slice of gravy-soaked bread.
Oh my Dave, an actual
so we can test out the theory. Do you want to go in, Dave?
I'm going to go in.
Let's see what this actually
this
tastes
is
like.
The best thing anyone's ever done on this podcast.
I dread to think what kind of state the gravy bit would be in if you posted it up to Leeds.
Mm. It's actually not bad.
It's quite good, you know.
Yeah. Talk amongst yourselves while we just...
Now do you see why Ross was so upset? Is it that good?
Yeah. I'm kind of starting to get it now.
Mm.
But yeah, the moist maker kind of works. I'm actually wishing I... Because I think I've gone a bit light on the gravy. pops a bit more in.
Talk me through the soaking process. How did you just sort of dip it into the saucepan? Like, what happened?
Do you remember what at school when you would put coloured inks on the surface of a bowl of water, and then you would dip a piece of paper sort of across the surface of the water to get like a lovely spirally pattern?
Yeah,
that's very much what I did with the saucepan of gravy. So got the sausage bread.
I can picture it.
Side A, little tickle. Flipped it over, side B, little tickle, and then the middle of the sandwich.
I think I always imagined, watching this previously growing up, that the moist maker, the gravy-soaked bread in the middle, would somehow penetrate into a sort of moisty mess. Do you know what I mean?
That's what I was worried about.
Everything would come through.
I was worried that it would completely disintegrate, and basically the sandwich would just be just like a sort of gravy-soaked blob.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But no, what's happened, Pete, is a very sturdy turkey barrier either side of the moist maker has kept it wow, just well maintained, doesn't
there's it? There's a proper science to it, then.
There's both a science and an art.
Yes,
I would like to say,
and you've achieved both, my friend.
So there you go. So this is Ross's Thanksgiving sandwich with the moist maker. Now, something struck me rewatching this episode. Mm. There are in fact two. There are two sandwiches. Did you get this when you watched it back?
No.
So first of all, when Ross comes in and walks into Central Perk and says, there's a great line from Chandler where he says, "Oh, someone ate my sandwich." And Chandler, "Well, what are the police saying?" Which is great. But Ross is very sad because someone has eaten his Thanksgiving sandwich. Well, at that point, Monica says to him, "I've got the ingredients to make you another Thanksgiving sandwich."
Right.
So in fact, the episode should, in the interest of strict accuracy, be titled "The One with Ross's Sandwiches."
Plural, sure.
But and also another piece of trivia about this episode title, which I noticed, is the only Friends episode — this is a good pub quiz question if you've ever done a Friends quiz — the only Friends episode title that has the letter S four times in succession.
Ross's sandwich. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's very niche observation, but that's what we're here for.
Well, I very much thought that was the point.
Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah. That's exactly — if you want broad sweeping generalizations, it goes somewhere else.
I presume you spotted that in the title and then have been to check every other Friend's title.
I've been to check every other Friend's title.
That's impressive.
Okay, because it would have to be a Ross's something.
Yes.
And there are a few other episodes that are the ones with Ross's, but none of them begin
Ross's
with
wedding.
A
wedding. Yeah,
a son.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we're okay.
I feel like I have much more sympathy for Ross's sandwich frustration, having worked in an office where food regularly gets taken. Because I don't think when I first watched it, I appreciated quite how frustrating that can be. But now, having been in an office environment and experienced food being taken and food going missing, I get it. I totally get it, Ross.
Well, and you're saying that without even having eaten this sandwich that we've got
exactly,
here with the moist maker.
Yeah, right. The stakes are even higher for him.
You're just having your Sainsbury's meal deal mixed, aren't you?
Well, exactly. Like, but the problem — well, this is a very boring fact now — a downside to being at work at the end of the day, the hours I do, means that on a Friday, the fridge gets cleared at the end of a Friday. And if I've got plans on a Friday night after I've finished, then sometimes I put my food in the fridge. And I have previously encountered that when I go to get my food, the fridge has already been cleared for the end of the week and I haven't finished work and all my food's gone. And perfectly valid food has been thrown in the bin, much like Ross's sandwich ends up in the bin as well. Oh my God, I'm Ross.
If only you could put a note on the top of the sandwich.
I know.
A joke or limerick of some kind. Or the note that you really need to put on the sandwich, Pete, to stop it getting taken, is of course the note that Phoebe writes.
Which we do not know.
I really want to know what that says, because they are so appalled by it.
That's quite a bold move, isn't it, by the Friends. Are they literally going, write your own joke here?
Yeah.
You just do your own joke. Phoebe, yeah. Phoebe writes a note, because Ross's rather lame kind of knock-knock joke, as I think Joey says, you know, "You're lucky you didn't go home wearing your lunch." Phoebe then writes a note for him to put on his replacement Thanksgiving sandwich. But yeah, as you say, we're never actually shown what's on it. I mean, I assume it's pretty expletive-ridden.
Yes, and graphic.
As we learn, comes from someone that once stabbed a police officer.
Yeah, that is such a dark thing to reference, isn't it?
That's a really dark thing to reference, yeah. And actually, you forget that, you know, Friends is not afraid of a little bit of shock value sometimes.
No.
Because actually, you know, that's the sort of thing, if you told that joke as a stand-up on stage now, I reckon you would get a few oohs.
Yeah.
You know, of like, whoa, you — absolutely. Oh no, you didn't. Mm. But Phoebe kind of somehow gets away with it.
Not only is that note enough to shock her five friends, you know, quite obviously, it's enough to then turn Ross's seemingly entire force of co-workers into thinking he is seriously deranged.
Indeed. Like mental Geller.
Yeah, mental Geller.
As they nickname him. Yeah.
Again, probably a nickname that wouldn't particularly catch on these days on a TV script.
I'm not sure it would. I mean, he's having an open conversation about mental health, which we're all about. Sure. We're all about in 2019. I think the nickname Mental Geller probably wouldn't fly these days, but he kind of revels in this. And I always think Ross is the sort of person that would assume that he would get on quite well in prison because people would they'd nickname him the prof, you know, and they'd be like, you know, no one would start him because he'd be like, oh, no, the prof's okay. And I think he really kind of revels in this sort of quite badass reputation because I remember in the other episode, you know, he likes to talk about doing his karate. Ross kind of likes being a badass.
Well, he thinks it's getting him respect, doesn't he?
Yeah. Whereas in fact, everyone is simply a little worried about him and is obviously going to his boss, Donald, behind his back saying, yeah, we're a bit worried about Mental Geller.
But it's the thing, at this point, he hasn't actually done anything, has he? All he's done is the note. He's not acted any differently.
No.
And this note is enough to turn.
It clearly escalates really quickly because he comes back and he's like, oh, people are offering to write reports for me. Like, I'm not having to miss. And then Donald later on says he's missing deadlines. So he's literally within, like, presumably about 24 hours. Has started like swanning around the Museum of Prehistoric History, like Vinnie Jones.
It is like the prison, isn't it? Just collecting the cartons of cigarettes.
Absolutely. And,
like, I presume, again, without going into the sort of administrative side of the museum too much, a number of like formal complaints would have had to have been filed.
I imagine there must be.
Quite
a strict disciplinary procedure.
Sort of genuinely recommends him to a psychiatrist.
Yes.
You know, like this has gone up all within the space of what, 12 hours?
Yeah, I think it must be within the space. I mean, goodness knows what was on that note. Mm. It was probably, it was obviously dynamite, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I love the scene with his boss, Donald, when he comes in to chat to Ross, because it takes place in what is apparently the kitchen of the Museum of Prehistoric History. And I just love the little touches, like there are dinosaur fridge magnets behind Ross. Yeah. And you just think it's that people have loved building these sets. And, you know, all
what a museum a kitchen look like.
Absolutely. Yeah. All the best kind of cartoons and sitcoms and films or whatever. It's all about the attention to detail. And the fact that that's clearly just a little set that someone's quickly dressed for like a 2-minute scene. Yeah. They've thought, oh, we'll have a picture of a stegosaurus and some dinosaur fridge magnets. And that, but I almost feel like, you almost feel like you're seeing a celebrity because, like, that's the fridge. That's the fridge where Ross's sandwich was stolen from. Well, this is where the whole drama unfolded.
I also quite admire Ross's boss for coming clean, because in that situation when someone is clearly so angry, to be perfectly honest, I think I'd pretend that I knew nothing about the sandwich even if I knew I'd eaten it.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously a brave guy. He's a great character. You've never seen anybody that patently looks more like Donald than that guy. And he comes in and sits down, sort of very bookish. I mean, I'm still not convinced, you know, of what Ross actually does all day at the museum. I think we saw him once in one episode just like rearranging a display.
Yes, we've discussed this a couple of times before where I'm sure he's not on the ground in the museum by virtue of his seniority, but that's all we've ever seen him do.
Yeah, because Joe is a tour guide there in one episode,
that's
isn't
it.
He? Yeah, yeah.
And that's the one, and Ross is just fiddling
that's
with
it. And Ross is just in a display with like Neanderthal man, just like going, hi.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure, I mean, what Donald is managing him doing on a day-to-day basis.
No.
The amount of new fossils coming in, it can't be, you know, the in tray can't be that crowded.
Well,
that's
exactly what I mean. He cannot be setting up new displays every day with all the new thousands and thousands of years old things that are coming in. But yeah, we don't, until he starts lecturing and teaching in the later seasons, we never really see him do any actual work.
It's just something to do with the museum, isn't it?
Yeah,
they're going to do him without our friends. Chandler's like something. He's a transponster.
He's
something to do with numbers. And Ross is something. I mean, Monica's a chef. She's got a proper job.
We can get our
hands
on that.
Phoebe's a masseuse. We can get our hands on that. So Ross is then put in touch with a psychiatrist. And again, this happens astonishingly quickly. I mean, apparently no talking therapy of any kind is available.
Nope.
It's just straight to medication.
Yeah.
It's just a
quick referral. Dose him up.
Yeah.
He's sacked, basically.
They're like the busiest psychiatrist ever. Like, you know, some absolute charlatan. It's just like, yes, what's that? You're feeling anger. Rather than going like, well, have you got any underlying reasons for this? Yes. And I'm just, you know, my second marriage has just broken up. And, you know, it's just like, no, just take the pill. Take this pill now. And which will basically knock you out.
It's incredibly effective as well, because Ross has never been more laid back than when he's had his tranquilizer and his candy floss, is he?
This is a great scene, because I'm not an actor, but I think having watched actors try and act drunk or drugged, I think it's one of the most difficult things to do. Almost as difficult as anyone in a relationship will tell you, trying to act sober when you're actually pissed. But trying to act like off your face is usually pretty cringy.
And it's just overplayed, isn't
it? Yeah, and you just sort of like slur the letter S a bit.
Right.
And you're like, oh, I can see two of you.
Yeah.
You know,
Sean Connery.
Yeah, you just basically turn into Sean Connery. But when Ross comes into Central Park, I think it's a great bit of comedy acting when he just sits down with his candy floss, which is a lovely touch. Yeah. I don't know. I'd love to think that was something that just someone came up with on set. I'd love to think it was David Schwimmer.
Yeah.
Just went, I should have some candy floss. Yeah. It's just an absolute genius touch because you sort of fill in the blanks on your own of him walking home from the psychiatrist with the tranquilizer just starting to kick in. Suddenly everything looks fantastic. He's walking past Central Park and thinks,
there's a fun fair.
And it's like, yeah, probably had a go on a couple of things.
Yeah.
The other brilliant bit is he says hello to Chandler and sits down. And even though Monica is sat right next to Chandler, it takes him about 5 seconds to react to Monica being there. Doesn't he? He says Monica as if he's shocked that she's there about 5 seconds after he sat down. It's great.
As if she's popped up like a sort of naughty goblin. He's like, Monica! It is amazing. And the bit where he's just peeled a little bit of his candy floss off and he goes, he gave me a peel on account of my rage and I thought it was a good idea. And then he just goes, so I took it. And stuffs a little and takes like a sort of velociraptorish bite out of his candy floss.
Yeah.
It's so good.
But you are right, going back to the psychiatrist incident, we can only assume all that's happened is he's gone into a room and a psychiatrist has basically said, I hear you shouted the word sandwich at your boss. Here are some pills to tranquilize you.
You shouted my sandwich at your boss at a volume large enough to startle the pigeons in nearby Washington Square Park.
There's a couple of strange exterior shots in this, and it's not something we very often get in Friends.
No.
Is that, and the pigeon one is the one you remember from
that. The park is dead when the pigeons fly off. There is there's no human being in the park. It's purely pigeons, which, to be fair, I can imagine happens in New York. There are a lot of pigeons.
But there's the strangest exterior scene is right at the start. Did you notice this? Just before... we'll come on to the Phoebe storyline in a minute, but just before Phoebe walks into Central Perk, right at the start, there's an establishing shot after the credits, which you would assume would just be the outside of Central Perk.
Yeah.
In fact, it's the outside of a shop called Jimmy's, a coffee shop called Jimmy's.
How weird.
I've never noticed it before.
And there's like a weird sort of fur salesman shop, isn't
right.
there, as well? Something furs. Yeah, you're right. And it's not the apartment block. It's not Central Perk.
It's just sort of a thing in New York.
Yeah, it's just like this takes place in Manhattan.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
In a street.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, at the end. And it's very odd. There's another, talking of David Schwimmer's physical acting, just to go back to that, there's a really good moment where he comes in after Phoebe's notes obviously worked and he tries to make Joey give him a cup of coffee.
Yes.
And there's just a lovely bit of slapstick where...
Hey, Tribbiani, give me that coffee
now. Give me that coffee. And Matt LeBlanc just one hand shoves him on his shoulder and Schwimmer goes head over heels over the back of the sofa.
It's so well done.
It's like a Miranda level of over-the-top fall, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a proper... I mean, yeah, literally...
satisfying, isn't it?
He could have gone, you know, just, onto the arm of the sofa, onto the sofa, but no, he's gone all the way over, hasn't he?
His body's almost rigid.
Yeah,
and it's just
yeah.
flipped an entire 180 over the back of the sofa.
So good.
Hello, I'm Jack Beaumont, and this is Crime Club, the podcast where I talk to people who have done terrible, terrible things, either immoral or illegal, ideally both.
Oh, fucking hell, mate.
That's Crime Club.
Oi.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We've done Ross's sandwich, yeah. And shall we talk about? We've got two choices. We've got Joey.
Let's talk about Joey.
Let's talk about Joey.
Yeah.
So I've entitled this in my notes. I always split the plot lines up into three, and this one's entitled "Joey the Perv," because that's effectively what they're trying to make him out to be.
Is I'm Joey. I'm disgusting
for this entire episode. So Monica and Chandler. We've done the opening scene with the underpants, and Joey sort of started to take the heat, and he's got annoyed, and there's that nice scene where it transpires he's had to shave his legs. And then the next time, so there's three incidents. So there's the underpants, and then when Joey's coming back from this date, which in itself is mad.
It's mad that he has gone out. I mean, presumably Chandler knows that Joey's like due back at some point.
He knows that Joey lives there.
Yeah, exactly. He's not gone off for the weekend.
Yeah.
They've not double locked the door or anything like that. And him and Monica are planning to videotape themselves having sex on a blanket in the candlelit. In the middle of
of a living room into which the front door of the apartment opens.
I mean, I know they're clearly enjoying the frisson of danger that their secret affair is giving them. But, I mean, that's another level, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's practically dogging.
Yeah, that is proper exhibitionism, isn't it? I know, I thought that. And it doesn't strike me as a very Monica and Chandler thing to do as well.
Well, it's not. No, it's so... I mean, and actually, it's so out of character for both of them.
Mm.
And they sort of turn it round by going, oh, we're only... being like this because it's secret and it's making it exciting and we're both really bad at relationships, which is sort of the way they turn it round onto Joey and get him to help them. But it's such a crunching gear change for both of them. And how out of character is it for Monica to give Chandler a Polaroid of herself?
Well, let's talk about the naked Polaroid, shall we?
I mean, what?
Clearly a time before Snapchat and WhatsApp.
Yes, indeed.
But it's idea.
I mean, that's sexting late 90s style, isn't it?
With a lot of preparation.
Well, a lot of preparation.
So I can only presume she needed a tripod, a Polaroid with a timer.
But, I mean, if you remember what vintage Polaroid... Vintage. That makes me feel about 1,000 years old. Jeez. But if you remember what the original sort of Polaroid cameras would have been like, to take a selfie one would have been incredibly difficult because you had to depress the button a little bit to get the flash to charge up. Yeah. So it was like, and it would go like, and then fully depress the button to get the click.
It's just not worth the effort.
And they're big, bulky things as well. It's a two-hand job. It's not really a one-hand job.
So I mean, just imagining what the naked selfie of Monica would have been like. She's holding up a bulky Polaroid camera with both hands. Her flash is going to be like right in her face. So she's going to be like incredibly washed out and overexposed.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it was the sexiest picture there's ever been taken.
Surely someone as small as Monica wouldn't be able to hold the Polaroid camera too far away from herself. Therefore, it's probably at best just got like one boob in.
Mm. Well, yeah, because you said, Dave, she'd need a tripod and a timer. That didn't exist though. There wasn't any such thing as a Polaroid camera with a timer on it.
No, that's true.
Self-timers are a noughties thing,
well,
surely.
That was why I mentioned the tripod, because I just figured the selfie would be nigh and impossible.
Unless it was on a tripod and she pushed the button like with a long stick, like a broomstick, or the pole they used to poke ugly naked guy that time when they thought he was dead.
From across the room.
Yeah, and that'd be a nice bit of continuity. Yeah. Maybe she used part of the ugly naked guy's stick.
Giant poking
device. To take the naked Polaroid selfie.
I think we can ultimately conclude that's exactly what happened.
I think that's exactly
what happened. We'll lock that into the happened file.
Definitely. But, you know, Chandler is so kind of not bothered about it that he just leaves it in a magazine on the sideboard as
well. I mean, astonishing.
What's going on with that?
There's a lot of strange, small details about this entire plot. And actually, just before, did you, again, watching these episodes back in a different way when you don't just sort of skip past it in your brain, but when Joey arrived at the door just before he went into the date, he just engaged in this strangest of conversations with his date about, she said, I wondered if you were going to ask me out. And then he said,
Are you still wondering?
She's like, no, we just went out. And he goes, oh, you're smart. I like that. And just walks off.
It's so weird.
In no world would any self-respecting girl have sort of gone, this is the man I want to sleep with.
Oh, I'm coming straight in. Yeah. I mean, if she didn't balk at that, I'm surprised she was bothered by the cameras and the candles, to be honest. She'd just be like,
it's also the timing of that whole conversation, because she's already got to the point of coming up several flights of stairs to the outside of his apartment for no apparent reason. And then they have the conversation about whether she's going inside. Like, surely that's already happened before you literally go upstairs outside.
That's a really good point. Surely the point when he buzzes himself in
and goes, check the top floor,
checks the mail, yeah. And they walk up five flights of stairs. Yeah.
Joey finds the naked picture in the magazine, like you say, eating. There's a lot of funniness in that scene.
There's a great bit. I mean, just the fact that you know, Joey comes home with a bucket.
Big bucket.
What is very obviously KFC. Yes. And although it's a bit throwaway, the size of the drink he puts down with that as well.
Huge.
Huge.
And the size of the bucket as well.
The bucket's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And then this all concludes, doesn't it, with the big scene where they're trying to cover it up and Joey's a sex addict. And
it's such a nice turnaround, though, because so many of the gags that are given to Joey in Friends are just, I'm so freaking thick.
Stupid, yeah.
And, yeah, I'm just stupid. And the fact that he gets to turn it around and put Monica into this brilliant kind of humiliating situation.
Yeah.
I slept with Monica.
Yeah.
It's just genius. It's a lovely little bit of Joey triumph.
Right,
which
exactly.
I really relish.
And you can see the cogs ticking in his brain. And yeah. The fact that he's managed to come up with this thing.
Which is actually incredibly clever. Yeah. It's not a Joey-esque plan at all.
No, he's hit on something, be it by accident or deliberately, that is absolutely perfect for this situation.
Yeah.
But then you can now, the joy of it then is watching him try and adapt his story.
Yeah.
Every time a new bit of information is represented. Do you know what I mean?
But then, and Monica is sort of backed into a corner where she's got to help him out.
Yes.
And has to sort of go like, I guess I set up the video camera to try and entice Joey. And then Joey has this great line. Just like, sadly, I could not be enticed.
Yeah, that is
so good.
I think perhaps I'm not as good a friend as Joey as well, because I would absolutely have sacked this off to protect my own reputation long before he does. He's very patient.
Oh, 100%. And also the inducement he's been given by Chandler and Monica to cover for them is so tissue thin.
Right.
Just like, we feel this is going really well for us and maybe that's because it's a secret. We're bad at relationships. Help us.
Yeah.
You just be like, grow up. Grow the heck up.
Also, it's not like we're going to try and go on national television and announce this.
No.
There's three other people in our friendship group, all of whom will keep it a secret if you ask them to.
Well, one of whom is heavily tranquilized.
One definitely won't remember.
There has literally never been a better time to come clean than right now while Ross is eating candy floss.
But you're right, Pete. There's something I noticed as well, is because even when they'd stumble up on this sort of cover that makes it all make sense, Monica and Chandler are still basically trying to go, are you sure, yeah. Joe? Are you sure you're not a sex addict? Mad pervert?
Yes. Like,
are you sure we can't just pin this all on you? They're really trying to claw it back. They're not acting very friendly.
No one really has each other's back at this point, do they? No, definitely not.
Right, Phoebe.
Phoebe. Love a good Phoebe plot.
Yeah.
It's nice when Phoebe gets a little bit of screen time. And I think it's relatively rare that we've had Phoebe and Rachel paired together like this, but it's always good when we get those two together.
Yeah.
Because they are, at least Kudrow and Jennifer Aniston, two genuinely brilliant comic actors, and it's good to see them doing this bit together. So Phoebe's decided to take a literature class. And I mean, it looks like the most boring evening class ever.
Dreadful.
I mean, it's basically like it's a slightly formalized book club,
yes,
isn't it? It's a book club without any of the fun bits of a book club.
Right, because the good thing about wine.
Yeah, exactly. It's a book club without the wine. And they have to sit on those awful chairs that have like an attached table.
Proper American high school
chairs. American high school thing, absolutely, yeah. And obviously Rachel hasn't read the book. Of course Rachel hasn't read the book because she's Rachel.
Right.
She's, you know, she's prom queen.
Yeah.
We discovered that she had not read Wuthering Heights because she was going to a pep rally.
Yes.
Now, so that's something I had to Google. I don't know about you guys.
No idea.
No.
There's come a point now where the completely isolated American references, I just have to gloss over because there's so many things. So what is a pep rally? I imagine, let me try and guess.
Okay, try and guess what a pep rally is, because I have looked at it now.
Is it some sort of, I imagine it involves cheerleaders and football players.
Yes.
And it's some sort of, can I tell you what I'm imagining? It's like the opening ceremony of the Olympics, but for a high school football team.
That is more or less exactly what a pep rally is.
Is it?
It is basically, it's a rally, I think, that normally takes place before a before a football game or a basketball game or whatever, where you have your cheerleaders and you have the band marching up and down,
right,
and you just build enthusiasm or pep,
right,
for your school spirit.
So American, isn't it?
So American. I mean, a pep rally. You couldn't call it an enthusiasm rally because that literally that's too Orwellian,
yeah,
isn't it? That's the sort of thing that they do in North Korea, isn't it? An obligatory enthusiasm rally will take place at 10:30 a.m.
It's a very fine line, though, isn't it, between the two?
It is a very fine line. But Rachel, yes, she couldn't read Wuthering Heights because she went to the aforementioned pep rally and was, of course, being Rachel Green, being all Rachel in Rachel world on top of the pyramid.
You acted that line better than Brad Pitt did, actually.
Thank you so much.
Previously discussed one of Brad Pitt's worst acting performances in his career.
Yes, it's weird. Yeah, suddenly being on Friends was like acting kryptonite to him, wasn't it? Yeah,
he just
very bizarre.
Couldn't quite do it.
It was like he wasn't an actor and yet he had a guest role. It was like he was famous for something else.
Right.
See also Helen Baxendale.
Actually.
You just see people that are good at doing things in every other scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just doesn't quite work in that world for some reason.
So getting back to Phoebe and Rachel at their literature class. So basically Rachel stitches Phoebe up royally by stealing what is apparently Phoebe's one insight into
Wuthering Heights. She's nothing else to say once that point's been made.
She has nothing else to say. But what is amazing that like Rachel steals this one, the wildness of the moors mirrors the wildness of Heathcliff's character. I mean, it's not exactly, you know, Levi Strauss level of structuralism. But then when the teacher then goes to Phoebe and asks her for any insight into Wuthering Heights, she's got nothing left.
Yeah.
And does this amazing thing where she sort of answers questions with questions.
Yeah. And that's a really funny comedic scene. But like you say, she's come prepared with page one of the York notes for Wuthering Heights.
Yeah. That's it, isn't it, really? Yeah. But it's like she hasn't even read the book. I mean, there's some, surely it put on the spot. If you just read Wuthering Heights, you'd be able to say like one thing about it. But I guess she panics. Yeah. Maybe she panics.
And then we get this lovely turnaround where she feeds Rachel all this stuff about Jane Eyre involving robots. And,
yes. And Rachel says it's ahead of its time. And the actor playing the teacher, delivers this line in a slightly strange way. And he goes, you could tell he's absolutely made up to be having a line about feminism in the last century, can't he? And he's like, this is great. He delivers it with such relish. Like, if you're talking about feminism, I think you're right. It's like, whoa, okay. You're really making the most out of that one.
And it's a really interesting change, like an interesting sea change from his attitude in the last class,
yes,
which was very dismissive. And,
yes,
you know, when Rachel sort of said the love story thing, he was like, basically going, you're all idiots.
Yeah, that's kind of a given as well. Oh, geez, thanks. Yeah. I'm paying for this class.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of that plot, isn't it? That's sort of, it's a nice just nightly tide of...
Again, they do like a classic Friends thing of glossing over the rest of the class.
Yeah.
Because they're like, it's not going to get funnier than that.
Yeah.
We're cutting here.
Yeah.
And then they get home and Phoebe's come back to Rachel's apartment and is taking a cut off going like, oh, it's just so funny when you started comparing Jane Eyre to RoboCop.
Yes.
It's funnier to say that, I think, than it would have been to see Rachel attempt to compare Jane Eyre to RoboCop. So again, like Phoebe's notes, we're kind of filling in the blanks ourselves, but probably in a funnier way than it could have been, ever have been written.
There's a lovely unspoken bit of acting by Lisa Kudrow as well, when obviously the way that we see it, Phoebe is sat in front of Rachel and Rachel is making her point behind Phoebe's back. And Rachel says the line about, and also the robots. And Phoebe just does this smile where she knows that her little trick has worked. And it's really, really nice. She doesn't have to say anything, but you can see how satisfied she is that it's worked.
She is the cat that got the cream at that stage, isn't it? And also the one thing I wanted to point out was the fact that for the first class, the Wuthering Heights class, Phoebe's like dressed as a schoolgirl, isn't she? She's put her hair in pigtails and she's wearing like a white shirt with a cub scarf around her neck.
It's really sweet.
It's
kind of sweet because we then later realise that the whole reason she wanted to do this because she never got to go to high school.
Yeah.
And this is, a proper thing for her.
It's a lovely little touch. I'm never sure whether I'm completely overanalyzing, but I like to think all these things are deliberate.
I think they probably are.
And it is a lovely, lovely little touch there.
Should we do the quiz,
yes.
Pete?
Yes, I've just seen my phone light up. Have you sent revised questions?
Yes, I have. So here's
is it because I've perceptively mentioned some of the things that were in the quiz?
Yes!
Come on!
We've
Can I say that's what I was secretly hoping
was it? At the time. I sort of saw your face throughout as you dropped sort of extraneous details that you didn't really need to say. There's still at least one question in this quiz that you definitely know the answer to.
Oh goodness, okay, well, no pressure then.
I've tried to pull back some of our reserve questions to drop in, some of which are easier, some of which are hard. I reckon there's two which you might not get.
Fair enough. That,
even based on this level
of ready for the challenge. We'll see.
Okay, question one. Let's do a couple of easier starters. Why was Rachel late for class?
Because she left late. Yes. Was actually a great line.
A really funny
such
gag.
Such a good gag, yeah. Yeah.
And what I use in my life, I'd probably on a monthly basis.
Yes, indeed.
It's a really disarmingly charming way of excusing yourself for being late, isn't it?
It's the modern day, I have a subsequent engagement.
Yes.
Turning exactly. Something down, yeah.
Question two. I think you're going to get this one, Chris. What's Ross's boss called?
He's called Donald.
He is called Donald. You've got yourself another point.
The most Donald of all the Donalds.
The most Donald. That's the tagline for this episode. Question three. One of the tricky ones. Where is Phoebe taking her literature class?
It's the new school.
It is the new school. Okay. You're fine with this.
I've watched Friends before.
Yes. Fine. Three out of three.
Question four. What previous class inspired Phoebe into taking her literature course?
Her Lamar's class.
Another great...
I had to Google this. I didn't know what that was.
So this is it's basically what we would call an antenatal class.
Yes.
Yeah.
So as she says, with a less painful final exam. Yes. Another great Lisa Kudrow really. Line.
There's loads of just brilliant one-liner gags in this episode.
It's really good, packed episode, isn't it? There's not much wasted space.
And question five for a full house. What is the name of the literature teacher?
What's he called? Is he called Leon?
He's not.
Something like that. It's a one-syllable word.
Yes. And it's only referred to...
It's right at the end when Monica says, I've got da-da-da to give us a test next week.
Yes.
What is his name? It's something it's just something really simple like Leon or Don or Dean or something like that.
It's close.
What
I'm
is
afraid
it?
It's Carl.
Carl! Yes, of course it's Carl.
Oh, well, do you know what? I'm secretly thrilled that we managed, because I was genuinely worried that we wouldn't be able to find enough questions to trip you up.
And you know what?
I'm not trying to trip you up, Chris. But...
But I thought on the way here, I bet that's one of the quiz questions, and I didn't have time to go back and check, because I couldn't think of what his name was.
Yes, oh, that's really frustrating.
I'm angry with myself.
You've given a very good account of yourself, Chris. You've done very well.
Well, yes. Thank you.
Chris Smith, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank
I love
you,
it.
Chris.
It was so much fun.
It's been an absolute joy, and I've still got a sandwich and a half to eat.
Well, if it's too much for you, put it in the bin.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.